are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. And believe it or not, Timberwolves are already done with the Mankato portion of training camp. As we're here on a Friday, they're taking the day off, I believe, on Friday. They had media day Monday, traveled down to Mankato about an hour, hour and a half southwest of the Twin Cities on Monday evening. Practice Tuesday, had a famous lasagna dinner at Glenn and Becky Taylor's house there in Mankato on Tuesday evening. Practiced on Wednesday and headed back to Minneapolis. Are going to practice, I think once there in the Twin Cities before taking a day off. Next Tuesday, they'll be in Phoenix to take on the Suns, Ricky Rubio, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, all those guys on Tuesday at Talking Stick Resort Arena. So get excited for that. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about training camp notes that are out there, mostly on Timberwolves.com and some different Twin Cities beat reporters and folks that cover the Timberwolves. We're going to sift through some of those notes. We'll follow that with some thoughts on Andrew Wiggins' comments that are currently making the media rounds, mostly related to the vibe surrounding the team and apparently his growing confidence that he's talking about, and not so subtly throwing his past head coach, Tom Thibodeau. I don't believe he ever used his name, but it's not too hard to decipher what he's saying. Throwing him under the bus a little bit and talking about confidence levels being about as high as they were as a rookie and things of that nature. So we'll talk a little bit about that today. And I guess if there's any reading between the lines that needs to be done, we will absolutely do that. And then finally, we'll wrap up with a look at the article on SB Nation from Tom Ziller, who's a great writer. Enjoy the vast majority of his stuff, but he wrote an article that posted, I believe, on Thursday morning, maybe late Wednesday, about the Timberwolves heading back towards a relevancy this year after a couple of years of being more relevant, according to Tom Ziller. So we'll beg to differ, of course, here at Locked On Wolves, but even still, regardless of your team affiliation or who you follow, calling a team with a top 15 player relevant is an interesting choice and I think misses the mark a little bit. So we'll talk a little bit more about that as well. So first of all, we'll jump right into some training camp notes, some pretty quick hitters here, as I don't know that there's too much outside of the typical reporting from Kyle Ratke, the digital content manager at Timberwolves.com, who does a great job. So early on in training camp, there was a lot of talk about lineups and in the different groupings that would be out on the floor together, as well as switching on defense, how important that was going to be to this year's team, and how excited guys like Jeff Teague were to actually play a more modern defense than the scheme that Tom Thibodeau had coached the three seasons prior. There's a lot of talk about switching. Kyle Ratke reported on Wednesday before the team left Mankato about Jordan Bell's ability to guard multiple positions. He has guarded any threes, fours, and fives in camp. He played mostly five with the Warriors. We've speculated a little bit on this podcast about whether or not Bell will be the primary backup to Towns at the five, taking Gorgui Dieng's role as a 12 to 16 minute a game guy, which is essentially what he was with Golden State for most of his 2 years there. Or if he'll potentially even start at the four. Robert Covington, I think, is the odds on favorite to start at the four, but depending on matchups and if the Wolves decide that he's a better fit as a starter than Noah Vonleh, or again, based on matchups as a possibility, I think the most likely scenario is he's backing up both the four and the five, plays more minutes than Towns backup typically would, but splits his time between the four and the five. And if the Wolves want to play a massive lineup, with both he and Vonleh on the floor, or even with Covington at the three and Bell at the four, you can pretty much switch anything. Or maybe it's Jake Layman, who's another player that can guard a couple positions. He might be playing some three or with Bell at the four and Towns at the five. And the Wolves will just have so many options this year in terms of lineup combinations. But the note from Ratke was basically that Ryan Saunders was specifically calling out Bell's ability to guard multiple positions, and that in a drill where bigs and smalls were guarding each other, Bell wanted to stay in and guard the small, and basically said, no, I can do this. And Saunders was impressed by that. I think Bell's a guy who's more versatile than what he was able to do with Golden State, and that's not really blaming Steve Kerr or the Warriors at all, because they didn't need Bell to do much more than his role. But he's a guy who can handle the ball, can pass the ball on offense as a big man, and can guard multiple positions on the defensive end of the floor, certainly fours and fives, and apparently some threes as well. So we'll keep an eye on that. I'm really intrigued to see how the Wolves manage this stable of guys who can guard the four. They've got a bunch of guys who are mostly threes that can play the four, whether it be Robert Covington or Jake Lehman. Got a bunch of guys who are fives that can guard the four, in Towns and in Bell, and even Gorgui Dieng can guard some fours. And then they've got some guys who are natural fours, like Noah Vonleh. Kata Bates-Diop is more of a natural four. And it'll be just fascinating to see how they manage that 3-4-5 kind of log jam, and how the Wolves go about that early in the season. That was kind of the big thing. I guess there were some other notes about cutting and the amount of cutting that there's going to be in this offense, which there simply wasn't enough in Tibbs' offense in past years. Lehman made a living off of being a cutter with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum in Portland last season in his breakout year. It was his third year in the league, but really his first year that he played significant minutes. And he's going to get that opportunity in the Wolves offense this year. And Josh Okogie talked about him being involved more as a cutter, which he didn't do much of last season. He kind of hung around the perimeter and occasionally got some open shots when guys were doubling. Teams would double Towns, and Okogie would be left open. And, you know, he only shot like 29% from three last year. So clearly the Wolves know that he needs to get more attempts at the rim. He's athletic. He can finish through content, and he's a solid free throw shooter. So trying to get Okogie more involved in cutting to the rim is certainly a good play. So I think we'll see quite a bit more of that this season. All right, before we move on to talk a little bit about Andrew Wiggins, and then eventually the Tom Zeller article, wanted to pass along a note on our friends at Manscaped. Manscaped is number one in men's below the belt grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. Again, 20% off and free shipping with the code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. All right, let's talk a little bit about Andrew Wiggins and his comments that he's made. He made some comments at Media Day on Monday related to feeling extremely confident, which, you know, is pretty typical Media Day talk, and we've heard things similar to that from Wiggins in the past. Then he appeared on the Score North podcast later in the week and talked a little bit more in depth and you know, provided some good clickbait for some folks out there for some aggregation articles related to his thoughts on the coaching staff and some of the changes the Wolves have made over the last few years. Long story short, Wiggins felt like he, you know, played really well in his first three seasons in the league. And then Tom Thibodeau took over. Wiggins played for 3 years under Tibbs. And the first year was okay, and then when Butler was acquired in year two, Wiggins took a big dip, had the worst year in his career, and then year three, last season, started out just as poorly, and there was a little bit of a rebound in the second half of the year. Maybe not so coincidentally, when Ryan Saunders took over as interim head coach, and Wiggins' rebounding numbers especially spiked. Still not where they need to be, but compared to where he has been throughout his career, Wiggins just played harder. I mean, and that comes through in those rebounding numbers, and just the way that he played for Saunders, and I guess, you know, perhaps that says something about Wiggins, but you know, it's hard to get too upset when there's a guy who's just motivated different than other players, and some guys just play better for certain coaches, and that's a reality. But the comments made by Wiggins, he talked about being on the rise early in his career. And that's, I guess the quote is, he was on the rise. And then changes were made. And that's a quote he gave to Derek James of Canis Hoopus. He said, "I feel like I was on the rise my first 3 years, and then some changes were made." The change, I think, is more references Jimmy Butler than it does Tibbs in that sense. The podcast interview that he gave, a direct quote from him, which can only be attributed to Coach Tibbs. Here's a quote from Wiggins, quote, "All the yelling and stuff I feel is not going to really change my mood, But when a coach comes at me and is real and tells me the real, I feel like I respect that a lot more than anyone just yelling. Because anyone can yell, anyone can raise their voice, but not a lot of people can be real. So that goes a long way for me. And then, end quote. And then he goes on to talk later, more specifically about Saunders. He says, quote, he's a player's coach for sure. He has a great energy about him. And I feel like a lot of guys can relate because he's not too much older than us. And I feel like he gets us, end quote. It's no secret that Wiggins and Ryan Saunders go back. Obviously, Wiggins was an acquisition made by Flip Saunders, and Wiggins was at Ryan Saunders' wedding, and they've been friends since Ryan Saunders was a developmental coach and assistant coach with the Wolves. And so we've known all that. There's certainly a comfort level there. But clearly, Towns has talked about this week already, that Saunders does hold players accountable, and he's all about that. So it's not simply oh, he's close to my age and he's going to let me get away with whatever. It's an approach thing and it's a respect thing that it certainly seems like certain players didn't feel like they were getting that from Thibodeau, in the first, back a couple of years, which is, again, not surprising. It's something we've heard before, but Wiggins being so candid with it is a little bit surprising. Wiggins talks a little bit about his confidence. He's as confident as he was since his rookie year, and he's worked hard this summer. Typical things that you'll hear in training camp and at media day. But I mean, we'll see what that means. We'll see what that converts into. There's also been some quotes floating around that are more specifically from Ryan Saunders about Andrew Wiggins' shot selection, and the Wolves needing to make sure he's shooting more efficient shots. Going back to our first segment with Josh Okogie, same thing. If Okogie gets a wide open corner three, if anybody gets a wide open corner three, they need to shoot the ball. But if Okogie or Wiggins can get an open cut to the rim and finish at the rim through contact or get a wide open dunk, clearly that's a better shot for both of those guys, who are both league average or worse shooters from beyond the arc. And with the Wolves having guys that can knock down threes in Towns and Covington and even Jeff Teague, Jake Lehman, Vonleh even, a lot of guys who are league averagey or a little bit better from beyond the arc, those are the guys that should be spacing out, and guys like Okogie and Wiggins should be diving to the rim. Jarrett Culver early on certainly should be diving to the rim, getting the ball and finishing at the rim instead of lingering around the perimeter and shooting what would probably be mostly contested long-range shots. So it'll be really interesting to see. There was no mention in the piece of Kyle Ratke's write-up about Wiggins in the cutting portion of his piece. Not that that means that Wiggins won't be cutting in the offense, but Wiggins is a player who has actually been good when he cuts without the ball, receives the ball, and can take one dribble or no dribbles and go up to the rim. But Wiggins, we've talked about this at length on this podcast previously, but Wiggins' shot attempts at the rim have gone down each year over the past three or four seasons, pretty drastically. His dunk attempts have gone down a ton. They're like half of what they were three or four years ago. And that shows a couple of things. One, the inefficiency of the offense, and two, Wiggins himself is being less aggressive, whether it be cutting within the offense or simply driving and getting the ball to the basket, and instead is settling for longer jumpers and forced contested shots. With Wiggins' athleticism and his length, and actually he's pretty good when he does choose to take the contact and finish through it. And perhaps there's a confidence thing related to his free throw shooting struggles the last two seasons. He's been under 70%. He was at like 63% 2 years ago from the free throw line. So maybe there's something where he doesn't want to get fouled and go to the line. Who knows? But those are things that if he can get through that, he can be a he can at least tread water on the offensive end of the floor and hopefully be a plus if he continues to rebound like he did at the end of last season. So I feel like we're in kind of the same spot we have been in several times over the past few years with Wiggins. We kind of have to give him the benefit of the doubt going into the season, at least in terms of the work that he says he's put in and the different attitude and the different offense the Wolves are going to deploy and the amount of work and time and effort they've put into trying to get Wiggins to understand his shot selection. So we'll see. I mean, it's very likely we're sitting here in 3 months, maybe right before Thanksgiving, and we say we're a month into the season and Wiggins is the same old Wiggins. That's probably more likely than not. But the Wolves are at least going to give him a shot to change things around early in the year. And as I've said before, it wouldn't surprise me if they shifted on him at the trade deadline or next summer if they don't see exactly what they need to see, or even if they don't, even if Wiggins improves but not to the level where his contract is worth it, the Wolves could certainly choose to move on and cut their losses and say, hey, thanks for improving your trade value, Andrew, move forward and acquire a second star in a different manner. I think that's extremely plausible moving forward. All right, next up, we are going to talk about the Tom Diller article on SB Nation related to the Wolves and whether or not they're an irrelevant organization as we sit here today heading into the season. All right, do you think the Timberwolves are an irrelevant organization? Probably not. If you're listening to this podcast, you're likely a Timberwolves fan or clearly follow the Wolves on some level, or are tuned in enough to the NBA that you're listening to other teams' Locked On podcasts, which is awesome. And you should be doing that. But that also means you're a savvy NBA fan and you know that any NBA team with a consensus top 15 player cannot be, by definition, irrelevant. Tons was the guy that 2 years ago NBA GMs voted as the player they would most like to start their franchise with. He was on the All-NBA team, third team, 2 years ago. He was a two-time All-Star and is not yet 24 years old. I don't think anybody was arguing that the Bucks were completely irrelevant a couple years ago when they were winning 43 games with Giannis on their roster. Everybody knew the Greek Freak was the Greek Freak and was going to be a superstar, was borderline, wasn't far off from being an MVP candidate already, and was progressing rapidly. Not all that different from where Karl Anthony Towns is right now on a team that had already made the playoffs and won, 46 games, I think it was, a couple years ago. Granted, with Jimmy Butler on the roster, but relevant in a fantastic Western Conference, just 2 years ago. And then last year, winning 36 games in a terrible season of turmoil. And yeah, the 30 to 42 win range in the NBA is mediocrity. It's NBA purgatory. And it's not a good place to be. But when you have a top 15 player with nothing around him and a player who sabotaged the season and a coach fired midseason, it doesn't necessarily make the organization heading into the next year irrelevant. I would argue that having Towns as a top 15 player immediately makes that automatically makes the organization relevant. People are going to pay attention to that. Towns is an extremely popular figure. But anyway, the Tom Diller article at SBNation.com at the NBA site there. And again, I mentioned at the top of the show, I think Ziller does a great job normally. I think he's a good writer. This article is a little bit of a stretch. He starts out trying to blame everything on Glenn Taylor, which isn't a terrible take. Clearly, things haven't gone as planned for Glenn Taylor over the past 20-plus years as the Timberwolves owner. He's had a number of stretches, the David Kahn hiring, especially the weird back and forth over Andrew Wiggins' max contract a couple years ago. There's just, some of his comments he's made. There's certainly been things that haven't gone great. However, the article doesn't really blame things on Glenn Taylor. It's more just a list of the bad things that have happened to the Wolves. And not all of them are directly related to Glenn Taylor. Some are simply bad luck. Others are bad decisions made by the people that Glenn Taylor hired, which I get that there's a common thread, but he doesn't really do a good job of drawing the line to Taylor. So the title of the article is "The Timberwolves Are Again Stuck in Irrelevancy. There's One Person to Blame." It's basically just a list of all the things that have gone wrong, dating back to when Garnett left or was traded back in, I guess it was 05 when he was traded. So hard to get too upset about the list of issues the Wolves have had. Clearly they've had many, but the issue that I have is just because the Wolves have been bad for that long and now are expected to be mediocre, it doesn't make them any more relevant or any less irrelevant than they have been. And the argument that suddenly they're back to being irrelevant, it doesn't hold a lot of water when they have Towns on the roster and they have a new front office that's clearly going to be making changes very quickly, already has made changes very quickly, has overhauled everything from top to bottom. They've got one of the most extensive analytics departments in the NBA at this point. They've got an extremely diverse front office and coaching staff. They have the youngest head coach in the league in Ryan Saunders. I mean, things are different than the quote unquote irrelevant Timberwolves of 3 or 4 years ago. And a team that's probably going to challenge for a play, you know, an eight spot in the West and win 40 ish games. It's hard to call them irrelevant with Karl Anthony Towns leading the charge. And I think my biggest issue is that any team can be considered irrelevant just simply based on their preseason win total projection, I guess, is what Ziller is saying. The Bucks were irrelevant until suddenly they weren't. And so suggesting that somehow they're now back in the doldrums of the Kurt Rambis years isn't exactly on point. And there isn't a whole lot of evidence to suggest that that's going to happen. I think last year can be thrown out for a lot of reasons for the Timberwolves. And you take that out, and clearly Towns is on an upward trajectory. So I struggled a little bit with the article. Head on over and read it. If you want to see a depressing kind of rundown of all the Timberwolves' sins of the past 15 years. And as we all know, there are plenty. But come to your own conclusion. I think being stuck in irrelevancy is kind of a tough way to put things for the Wolves as we head towards the season this year, given the amount of talent that they do have on the roster. And again, the new front office and coaching staff and just a fresh approach. Not exactly the same as a lot of what Wolves fans have put up with over the past however many years, 15 or so years. That does it for us today. We are nearing the end of training camp. As I mentioned earlier, we're going to see the next time we have a podcast for y'all, we're going to be previewing the preseason game on Tuesday night for the Suns against the Suns in Phoenix. So semi-real basketball's around the corner. We'll be breaking down what that might look like, what we'll be looking for in terms of matchups in that game, as well as the Wolves rotations and whether or not there's going to be anything we can glean from that game. So that'll be coming early next week, previewing that game, as well as then later in the week, middle of the week, we'll recap Tuesday's game. We'll preview the Thursday preseason game against the Warriors. And then, from there, we're only a couple weeks away from real basketball. So get excited. Once again, thanks for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. And once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.